What's going on, everyone? You're listening to 99 Yards here with your host, Adibot. And today, we got a special guest on the show. You want to go ahead and introduce yourself?
Yeah, my name is Claus Marte, CEO of Combody.
Yes, sir. So we're going to be getting into some stuff that's happened. And I just want to say, like, kind of your past and everything, just a little rundown of it.
Yeah, so, I'm going to tell you a little bit about myself. I'm born and raised in New York, still live here, probably going to die here. Mm-hmm. I was somebody that started a company called Combody, where we hire people coming out of the prison system to teach fitness classes. And it was all derived from my personal experience, where mm-hmm. I ended up in the prison system myself. Mm-hmm. I grew up in a pretty drug infested neighborhood in New York City, in the Lower East Side of New York. And at that time, in the 80s and 90s, it was crazy over here. Mm-hmm. Every 10 steps you took, you saw a heroin needle, you saw drug lines down the block. And as a kid, with an immigrant parent, my mom came from the Dominican Republic when she was 6 months pregnant with me. We ended up in a small little tenement apartment in my aunt's house. Mm-hmm. We basically lived on a couch together. And that was my life. And as I grew up, I understood that I needed money because my mother mm-hmm. couldn't provide anything but, food and basic necessities. And I wanted more. Mm-hmm. As a kid, I always aspired to be rich. And I remember going to school and people telling me, what do you want to grow up to be? And I told my teachers I wanted to be rich. And so I got into the world of drugs because it was the first opportunity mm-hmm. that I could see that avenue happen. And so as a kid, I started dealing, selling drugs at 13, quickly escalated to being one of the biggest drug delivery services in New York City. At 19, I was making over $2 million a year, and I was running a team of over 20 people. Wow. It was a crazy operation in the city.
Mm-hmm. So we'll be getting to that. As y'all know, I have to give out a little 30-second announcement here about Anchor, just so I can get paid and that. So y'all know how that goes. But anyways, we can get into it. Unless you're on YouTube, we're just going to go straight into it. But anyway, so let's start off. So you said you started dealing at 13, right? So that's great. So I heard that it was mostly like, were you around with your family or like, what was your family into that? Like, how's that?
Yeah, I had my whole family lived in this building, 42 Riven Street. Mm-hmm. Lived in the same floor with all my cousins and aunts, and it was just like maybe 30 of us.
Yeah,
like cousins wise.
Wow.
And we, I followed the steps of my older cousins who were already like selling weed, smoking, mm-hmm. dealing coke.
Mm-hmm. And you said so you came from an immigrant family, right? And you said that you're like the first born of that your family that was born here in America.
Yeah.
So what was the reason that like they came over? So.
Yeah. I mean, what most immigrants, parents and family members come to the U.S. for, they came here to give a better lifestyle, for mm-hmm. us. They come from a impoverished place, Dominican Republic. It was, mm-hmm. It was not a horrible place where they came from, because they came from like a farm, poor land, but mm-hmm. it's a beautiful land. You got food, you got and you got tropical weather.
Yeah.
It's not a bad mm-hmm. living, but you aspire to give your kids more. So you hear America and you hear money, and that's what my family to come here to succeed is.
Mm-hmm. So you said, as we said, we started at 13. Was it really another option at that point? Like, did you thought of that you wanted to take, or was that like kind of the only outlet that you had to get money? Because as you said, you wanted to get rich.
Yeah. I mean, there was, I could get like, I was making money when I was a little kid, like selling baseball cards and all mm-hmm. that stuff. And, running around the streets,
mm-hmm.
or opening up a 500 in the summer, washing cars and things of that nature. Real money, there's no real other avenue. Mm-hmm. I remember at that time, you know, minimum wage was like $3.25 in the city.
Oh wow.
It's, you know, how do you survive with $3.25? And that's what it was, you know. So and there was people surviving off of that, you know, with no assistance and all that stuff. But as a kid, and I had multiple jobs, you know, I had side hustles here and there. So yeah, I did try to go legally, you know, a few times, but it was not enough for me.
It was, yeah, you don't get that success. And I know, like, some stories I've heard that, like, you make like a good 100K, like, easy. So it's like, it's hard to get away from that whenever you're making that type of money, I guess.
It's not easy money, you know. People,
yeah, think, it's not, yeah,
yeah. People think like, oh, I'm gonna go sell drugs tomorrow.
Oh, yeah,
hey, you know, like, it took a long time for me to get there, you know, and it didn't happen overnight.
Yeah, but I also heard that you started off as like more of a middleman, where you were just getting money for like people at school, and then going to get the drugs, and then give them back, and then get a piece of that. Is that how? Yeah, it started?
I mean, as a kid, I was going to school, and I was the kid that was known, you know, to get the weed. I was smoking weed before anybody else. And so we were all like scramble up, you know. They were, you know, I would get $5 from all my friends, and I go down the block to my cousin, you know, on the corner, and be like, yo, can I get a nickel? And we're going down the block to, you know, smoke. And so I was that middleman where, like, yo, that, you know, everybody's scrambling money, let's buy something, and then we're going to smoke. And so it was like a supply and demand that really got me into the game.
Yeah. So, so this escalated, and you were at 19, you said you were making like $2 million, right?
Yeah, I was making over $2 million a year, around $5 million in revenue per year.
That's crazy. So, I mean, so like, what were you doing? Like, how'd you get that money? Because I know there's like a process in actually using the money. Like, were you all actually laundering it, or just what was that like?
Yeah, I was definitely not laundering it. I was just spending money. You know, I had at that time I had 5 vehicles, all from, you know, the latest year. You know, just balling out, going out.
Did people suspect anything? Like, whenever you try to like make big purchases like that?
I never really got like the feds knocking on my door because of that. You know.
Yeah. Was it okay? So you said the city like you grew up in, was it like kind of, wasn't the area like?
I mean, the Lower East Side now, it's like a gallery, hipster, you know, a gentrified neighborhood. Back then, it was primarily like Black and Hispanic, you know, families living down here. Mostly Hispanics, Dominican, Puerto Rican. And it was just, it was a real community. It was a very tight community, but also it's dangerous. So if you were not from around here, you're probably gonna get G-checked, you know. Really? Like, you couldn't walk down a block, and if somebody saw you as a suspicion, like a some type of gang member, like they're gonna stop you and talk to you, you know.
Yeah, that's crazy.
And that's how,
so yeah, I'm guessing, like, so was drugs a big issue in the city, like, for whenever you grew up there?
Yeah, I mean, the crack epidemic was crazy, you know. Like, it was, crack was everywhere, you know, and heroin was even worse, you know. I sold heroin a little bit, but I primarily like got into the coke and crack game, you know, at a very early age.
So how'd you get into coke exactly? Because I know that weed is a little bit more common to find, and you will find a whole bunch of coke or weed dealers and people who want weed, but how'd you get into coke dealing it?
Yeah, I mean, back then, you know, everybody sold on a corner. So people like stood on a corner, you know, everybody had their own corner. There was no like, you know, now you have delivery services, you have stores, you have all this crazy stuff, you know. Like, now, back then, we stood on the corner. And so I remember when I was 14 years old, I was selling weed on the corner, and the coke dealer stepped off the block. And this cokehead came up to me, and he was like, hey, yo, I need 2 bags. And I was like, yo, my boy Kevin's going to come back. Just wait, you know, come back in like 5 minutes. He's like, nah, I'm not coming back. I need it right now. And so I was like, all right, let me get the money. I went down the block, you know, to the next corner where they sold drugs too. Got the 2 bags, you know, gave it to him, got a profit. That was the first So I did it. You know, again, it was like supply and demand.
Yeah, so that's true. So like whenever like the person walked up, so you knew who to get it from, or like did you know all the connections already?
Yeah, I mean, I know who sold drugs by the time I was like 9 years old.
Probably. Oh, that's crazy. Oh, okay, I get it. So, okay, so I also heard that whenever you were running your whole drug operation, you were running it very like corporate-esque with like everyone handing out cards and suits and everything. So why was that?
That transition happened. So I caught a case. Caught a case when I was like 18 or so. I got locked up for like 60 bags of crack.
Oh wow.
I was 17 and I was fighting the case for a while. You know, when you go to court, you go to court every month, and you know, sometimes it takes about a year and a half, and I was out on bail and I was still selling coke and all that stuff, but I stopped the crack game when that happened. And then and when that happened, I was going back and forth to court with a suit. And So when I was going to court with a suit, everybody thought that nobody really, like, recognized me. I remember like stopping people on the street and be like, yo, what's good? And the court was like 15, 20 minute walk from my neighborhood.
Yeah.
And so I was like, yo, I'm going to start selling drugs on my suit, you know?
Yeah.
Somebody's going to recognize me.
Yeah.
And so that was the transition. And then, you know, the business cards, we just came up with the idea. I was basically like writing like these pieces of paper. I was ripping out pieces of paper, like, you know, writing my name, writing a phone number, and just handing it on the street, you know. And back in the day, you operated on a beeper, or, you know, you had like the old Nokia phones. And, you know, at that time, you know, I decided to make business cards. You know, my boy Joey and I, we went to Kenko's and printed out 5,000 business cards.
Oh, that's great. So I was about to say, so you mentioned Joey. So he was basically like, you were working together with him. So how'd you meet? How'd y'all meet with that?
I met Joey a long time ago. I met Joey, I don't know, when we was young, like very young, you know. He was known for like just doing a lot of breaking and entering into cars. Wow. He was just like hustling and breaking into cars, stealing whatever, you know, and that was his hustle. And then he got into the coke game. He was doing coke, like selling coke, you know, off and on, but I was primarily, that's what I was known for, that's what I was doing. I was on the block. This was like 2004. He came up to me and he was like, yo, I need this amount. I gave it to him. He sold it. He came back within like 30 minutes.
Wow.
And I gave him a little, you know, cut off of it. And then he was like, yo, I need more. I was like, I gave him more. He sold it right away. He came back. And I don't know, that day we just created a bond. We was like, yo, if you want to hustle, like, you know, together, let's do this shit. You know,
that's
let's
work.
He got his money. I got my money. And we just went. I bought, you know, coke off of it, and we just worked together. It was, and I already trusted him, you know, through like previous shit that we did on the street, you know. Yeah. So we were friends even before we even got into the coke game.
That's crazy. So how quick were you moving it? Because I know at one point, like, you had a whole bunch of phones and you're using that and you had drivers and everything. So how quick were you able to like move like coke a day?
We were selling about a kilo a week.
Wow.
Yeah, so, you know, it's about a 1,000 grams, you know, so you're selling 1,000 grams a week, and, you know, we were making like $90,000 to $100,000 in a off a kilo. Yeah.
So $90,000 to $100,000 a week, you said?
Yeah.
Oh wow. And then how many people were you having in your operation at that time?
So we were splitting up shifts, so there was like, you know, like 8 drivers, 10 drivers in like early night, you know, day shift, and then we'll have like late night shift or all the way to the morning shift. So we'll have like 2 shifts, and that's how we did it, you know. And then we had dispatchers, we had people that were bagging up, you know, all types of stuff.
Someone just asked if you had a, if you ever had a trap house.
Yeah, we had a few trap houses.
So is it just like a band house, something like that?
No, I mean, you call a trap house where you sell drugs out of.
Yeah.
You know? And so when I was a kid, like, yeah, I sold drugs out of a crack house, you know.
So you said that you went to court, you fought a case at 18, right? So what was it like being around with cops and that type of stuff going on there?
Yeah, I mean, it was in the beginning. I mean, I got locked up when I was 13 and multiple times, you know, I got locked up when I was 15. So I got not locked up 9 times throughout my whole, you know, time I was out in the street, whether it was like small little crimes like smoking weed or big crimes like, you know, selling coke and stuff. Yeah, I mean, it was a revolving door. I was not scared of the system. I was actually always mad and was like, had the mentality of like, fuck the police, you know, and that was my mindset. It was it, you know. Yeah, and it was obviously you get scared when you go into jail for the first time. You experience, you know, dealing with gangs and all the jail politics and all that stuff, and you just quickly got to adapt and learn, and you know, don't step over your boundaries.
Yeah. So okay, so I heard like a story where basically you were taking like the caffeine pills, right, with you and Joey, and you were like at a car one day, and you were like, you blacked out at the red light or something, and and the cops came and knocked down the doors, and then you had like some of the trunk. So what was that like moment like? Just walk me through that.
Yeah, that was just not one time. That was just, that would happen to us like multiple times, you know, because we would stay up for days. Like, you know, we would stay up for like 3-4 days driving, you know, going from customer to customer. This was like before we even had people that we were sending to people, you know, like this is like me and Joey, like just hustling. Yeah. Just ourselves doing everything, you know. And I remember, like, you know, I was knocked out on the car, like, I was knocked out in the passenger seat, he's driving, and vice versa. And so I remember he stopped at a red light. I don't even remember because I was knocked out, and cops woke us up, you know, and we tried to take caffeine pills to, like, you know, keep us up for days, and it worked, but you know, eventually your body gives out and crashes. And so I remember like the cops coming, knocking on the door and, you know, pulling us out of the car. And there was like, yo, you see all this traffic you're causing. And thank God we didn't even get in an accident. Cause he fell asleep with his foot on the brake.
Oh, wow. You know? That's crazy.
Got a red light, putting your feet on the brake, and we there for, I don't know, God knows how long we were there for, because the cops came, you know, and we stepped out of the car, and I remember we had drugs in the back. We used to keep like our stashes and like these Coca-Cola AW40 cans. You screw the top up and you stick shit in it.
So was it like one of those fake bottles?
And so, and then we had to always like bullshit groceries in the back, you know, just mixed in. And I remember them pulling us out of the car, and they just going through the whole car, searching everything. And I'm just tossing like the AW40 can across, and I'm like, thank God they didn't fucking.
Like, so once you saw that go, once you saw that's out of there, you were like, you kind of got a sigh of relief.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
And I actually got knocked with it. I got knocked with it.
Oh, before. Really?
Yeah. I got caught where they found the AW40 can. I think I had like 10 G's, you know, rolled up in there, and I had weed. It was me and my boy Bacalao. His name was Josh. He's locked up in Sing Sing right now, doing 15 years. But we got pulled over, and they found a can. And they put us on the hood of the car. They was like, yo, what was that? What was the coke that was in in the can. I was like, what the fuck are you talking about? All the coke was in my underwear. So and so I was like, nah, you bugging. And so they was like, well, we found weed. You know, they try to have us like say some bullshit. And it was like, well, we're looking for they were telling us, you know, where the guns at. We're looking for guns. Mm-hmm. You guys got guns and all this shit. And I remember, you know, they searched the whole car. That's all they found was the money. And they took it. And then as soon as we got back in the car, they was going to let us go. And one officer came. He was like, roll the window down. And he threw the can back with everything. And I was like, oh, shit. That's crazy. Yeah. They didn't take our shit away. And we just kept moving.
That's crazy. So, so how, like, how regularly would that happen where you just get searched and cops would just pull you over and stuff like that?
We got stopped like 2 or 3 times a day sometimes.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, just the way we looked, the way we acted, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I was riding around in I don't know if you guys remember the Dub magazine.
The Dub
magazine was a magazine with, you know, cars that had 20-inch rims.
Oh, okay.
And so I had a Cadillac Fleetwood pearl white seats with 22-inch gold rims.
Oh.
With crazy TV, the loudest speaker system in the block.
And that's crazy.
And so we look like crazy drug dealers, you know what I mean? So
yeah.
We got stopped all the time. Like, yeah, we were used to it and we were ready for it, you know?
Mm-hmm. How quick and how long would those stops be sometimes?
You know, could take like 20, 30 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it was right away.
Oh, really? So it would just be kind of like, was it just like routine for y'all? Just know how to go through it?
Yeah, I mean, we had stashes in the car. You know, we knew that they were not going to find it unless they had dogs, you know.
But, yeah. Did they ever bring out the dogs to get you for that?
Nah.
That's crazy. Because, yeah, that's crazy. So, So you said having guns. Did you actually have guns on you as well, like in the cars and stuff like that, or just drugs?
Nah. You know, when I was on the corner, I had a gun out in the street, but...
Mm-hmm.
You know, when we were doing delivery and legit stuff and, you know, it felt like it was corporate, like there was no real threat from the streets. You know, we were pretty incognito where we were moving around in different neighborhoods and we're not like in the hood anymore. You know, we're selling drugs to like people on Wall Street, you know.
Oh, crazy. Yeah. So, okay. So did you know who you were selling to? Like, did you have regular customers or did you have like, or were y'all always like getting new customers in and out because, you know?
No, we definitely had like regular consistent customers. Our product spoke for itself. We had like the best product out there.
Really?
So people kept coming back. You know, we were getting bricks. You know, I'm not going to tell you how we were getting it, but
yeah,
it was pretty pure, you know, the stuff that we were getting.
Yeah, that's crazy. So who are you hiring? Like a hiring because you said you had like what, 20 people working for you?
Like 23, 24 people.
Yeah. So how many? So who are those people? Like, did you know them?
Yeah, those were mostly all my friends who I grew up with.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Everybody that was just like people that I smoked weed with on a daily consistent basis. You know, like. It was just guys that were on the corner with me, you know, and I just gave them an opportunity. I felt like that back then.
Mm-hmm. And okay, so I want to talk about this one story, and it's just crazy. So there was a story that you were selling drugs off a horse in a horse carriage, right?
Yeah.
So you just walked me through that, because how did that go? Because that must be the craziest thing ever, like riding in a horse carriage selling weed.
So this was like the time where like Joey and I were doing all the sales, you know, ourselves. Mm-hmm. So it was early on and we were making a lot of money. So, and I remember we just finished making a sale in like Central Park over there. And we were walking by. And this is the time where we were like taking cabs to make deliveries, you know, we were riding around back of cab services and stuff like that. And so we ended up in Midtown. This is like, you know, maybe 3, 4 in the afternoon, and we just decided to go up to a guy with a horse and carriage, and we're like, hey, you know, can you give us a ride downtown? And they were like, nah. And we went up to like maybe five other horse and carriages. They all lined up on the same block. And this lady, she was like, I'll do it, you know, because we were offering them 5 G's.
Yeah.
We're like, fuck it. You know, we were so careless about money, we didn't give a fuck.
And I mean, how much did you have on you at the time?
We always carried around like 10 G's in each other's pockets. I mean, I've carried like 50, 60,000 in my pockets. It's hard to fit.
Yeah.
especially when you have 20s.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, that's how we did it. And we had to go from delivery to delivery, and it was crazy. It was just, it happened like so naturally where all our phone calls that were coming in from our clients were like on our way downtown. And so as we kept getting calls, we started going down Fifth Avenue, and we're getting like, you know, people calling us from like Madison or like Sixth Avenue. And we're just telling them like, yo, meet us on Fifth Avenue. We're on the corner of like 22nd and Fifth on a horse and carriage, you know, and we got clients like running up to a horse, and we go down to the block, to the hood, and we go to McDonald's with the horse and carriage. Everybody's, you know, looking at us like we're crazy. And I remember all the kids were out on the block, and we bought like, I think it was like a bag of apples. Yeah, we bought a bag of apples, and the kids were feeding the horse apples.
That's crazy. So like, how far away was it like from where they were supposed to go? Like, were y'all just taking it anywhere and she just let y'all?
Yeah, no, we went from Midtown, because basically those horse and wagons, they're only allowed to stay like 10 blocks away from Midtown. Mm-hmm. Like, so I think the most seven street they could go to is like 42nd Street, mm-hmm. and or 40 something Street, and they were like on 59th Street.
Oh wow. And
so we went all the way down like below zero, you know, we're in the name streets. they get hit with a ticket, but nobody stopped us. We just kept doing it, you know, and that was it.
Yeah, that's crazy. So y'all were just riding around, and that's crazy. So you said you had people coming up to you. So you were you just calling them and telling them that you were on a horse, and then just run up there and
I'm on a horse and carriage, meet me on 22nd and Fifth, you know. And so they're like, what? And I'm like, just get the fuck over.
And that's crazy.
We're riding like 5 miles per hour, you know, we're like causing traffic and all that shit.
Oh, that's crazy. Yeah, because the traffic in New York is that's crazy. I was just like maneuvering through there with a horse.
Yeah, we just like took like the side way, like, you know, we didn't go right in the middle of the lanes. You know, there's three lanes,
mm-hmm.
and we stood on one of the sides.
That's crazy.
Right lane.
So it was just riding. That's crazy. That's just a crazy visual.
No, we're just smoking weed. We took an e-pill. It was
what drugs were you doing at the time? Like because.
I was smoking like crazy. I was smoking like 50 blunts a day between both of us. We every day we would buy a box of Philly. And so the box of Phillies would be 50 cigars. And so we would roll up every day, smoke that. And we were smoking each like two packs of cigarettes.
Mm-hmm.
So we, you know, my lungs were destroyed back then.
Yeah, that's crazy.
And I don't touch none of that shit.
Yeah,
the last time I smoked was like when I went to LA, but I took one pull and I'm like fucking passed out.
Yeah, that's crazy. Okay, so now getting to the end of this, and basically where you started to like slip up a little, it was basically you said that you had another dispatcher from who's working with you basically start his own operation, try to mimic you kind of in a way. And how'd y'all catch him basically? Because it's something like one of your old customers, they were cool with y'all, like.
Yeah, so one of my dispatchers, he basically started stealing customers away from us. He came up with a separate card, he was selling separate Coke bags, they were in like blue bags. Mm-hmm. And so he basically started going up to like, or had his cousin working in our operation, because his cousin was making delivery for us. And so his cousin was doing his side sales of his own coke with his cousin, the dispatcher. Mm-hmm. And as they were going to other people, they were like, yo, this is the new number. This is the new number. Call this number. And they were giving out, selling their coke.
Oh, wow. And, so did he have it on your card and then say that was like the new number?
No, he just made up his own shit. I don't even know. I never saw the card.
Oh, wow.
but I know one of the, after a while, it didn't last too long. Maybe a couple months in while he was doing that shit. One of my clients called me, who had my personal number, and he calls me and he's like, yo, what's this coke that you selling now? This shit is whack. Like, you know, it tastes like it's cut, you know? And I'm like, what the
fuck? Oh, so this is from a whole, so he got his own coke going. It's not even like from, coke. Okay.
Nah,
oh,
yeah, wow. He got his own coke. And so he's selling his own shit. And that's why he fucked up, where the client hit me. And I'm like, wait. And he was like, by the way, the driver gave me a new number. And I'm like, what new number? What the fuck is he talking about?
Mm-hmm.
And so I take that number from him. I call that phone number. This motherfucker picks up. I'm like, yo, what the fuck is
he? Did he realize who it was?
Once he heard my voice, once he heard my voice.
That's crazy.
And he quickly hung up on me. I had this guy set. We had a condominium for him in Midtown. We got him a car. He was getting paid a salary. You know, like, he was set. You know, all he had to do was just answer the phone. And he was collecting the money from the drivers at the time and giving them the work. And so at the time, when I heard that, I hit up. I basically went over there and hit up my boy, hit up Joey and somebody else. And we went over there. And he disappeared with cash, whole bunch of coke, and then we only saw him one time after that. And so he called the cops on us, saying that we had guns.
So he snitched on you? So like,
yeah, one of my boys saw him down the block.
Yeah.
And he was like, yo, that's that motherfucker over there. And so while we were running down the block, he was like two blocks away. He's calling the cops.
Damn.
And as soon as we confront him, the cops are there.
Damn. So that's,
and then he got into the cop car.
Oh.
And we couldn't touch him. And then that was the last time we saw him.
Oh,
I know he didn't snitch. He was not the one that told on the whole coke operation.
Uh-huh.
Somebody else did.
Oh, and
yeah. One of my drivers basically got caught first, and you know, the whole DEA pressed him, and he told them like, where everything was at. They were surveilling me and all this shit, and you know, they started picking us off one at a time.
Really? So, I also heard that like, whenever, so you took his phone, right? The dispatcher, right?
Yeah, so I took the dispatcher's phone because I'm thinking like, yo, he stole my customers' numbers. Like, you know, this is, you know, I'm calling back. All my customers are going to be calling.
Oh, okay.
You know, so I'm thinking like every person that has this number is my old
customer. So you're thinking just basically like it's already customers that I already had.
Yeah.
It's just, okay.
But there was new people calling that phone. And come to find out, you know, one of the cars that he had ended up in a DEA agent's lap, and now the DEA is you know, calling us for drugs and all this stuff. And so we send the drivers over there. At the time, Joey got locked up for like some minor shit, like, mm-hmm. and he had to do like a year in prison. And so at the time I was running the whole operation by myself, and I just didn't trust anybody to handle the phones except for myself.
Oh, wow. Did you think that something was off whenever there was like new customers, or did you kind of know who it was, the DA?
It was crazy because the first time this guy called,
mm-hmm.
you know, I was driving, I have one of my guys, one of my delivery guys. He's in the car in the passenger seat. And this guy calls. He's like, "Yo, I'm on." I remember exactly where he was. He was on a 23rd and 8th by the Dallas BBQs over there. And I pulled over and I see this guy, and I'm in my M3, and you know, my boy Bacalao just jumps out, and then he sits in the back, and I'm like, I tell my boy, I was like, "Yo, this nigga look like a cop, like straight awkward, yo." And I should have trusted my gut, you know. Damn.
And you kept selling to him?
Yeah, we just kept selling. You know? Kept selling.
Damn. So do you think if you cut him off, or if you, do you think that they would have been able to track you? Or how does that go?
Yeah, I think eventually, you know, we would have sent like drivers over there. But that was the only time that they caught me directly.
Oh wow.
You know, in a vehicle, I didn't even do the sale. Mm-hmm. I was just driving. I didn't even like really talk to the guy.
Mm-hmm. But he still saw you.
Yeah, he saw me. And he was recording us.
Oh wow! Okay.
He was tapped at that time.
That's crazy. So okay. So here's a question that I had. So what happens if you never take that phone away? Like looking back at it, like hindsight, in 2020, what do you think happens if you never took that phone away?
If I never what?
If you never took that phone away from the dispatcher.
Man, I don't know. I think I would have been still operating.
Really? That's how crucial that.
You know, my company, Combody, would have probably never been started. So,
damn. Yeah. I feel like
everything happens for a reason.
Yeah. Which is a good thing. It's a good thing. So, I mean, now you got Combody and everything. But, okay. So, whenever you got caught, that day that you got caught, did you feel like even before that day, like were you kind of feeling that something was up with it and something was feeling weird?
Yeah, I mean that day, I was like sending my drivers from location to location, and you know, back then we used to use like Nextel phones, so they were like basically like chirps. We called them chirps back in the day. And every time I sent a driver and they got to the location and I told the client to come down, they were getting caught, you know. Oh, and wow. So it was about eight, nine drivers that got caught, that got sent to different locations. And I remember that night, it was so busy. It was Thursday. My list is just getting bigger and bigger. And I remember I was like, fuck, these guys must have went out or some shit, like they must be partying. And I was like, you know what, I gotta go make the sale myself. I gotta get this money. I can't, you know, we have a service that needs to be up to par. And so I go downstairs. I also call like drivers from different shifts to come get coke, and you know, it's gonna take them a while for them to get ready and all that stuff. So I was like, fuck it, you know, let me get this shit started. So I grab 100 bags of coke, you know, and I stepped out of that trap house, the stash house. And as soon as I stepped out of the stash house, you know, DA just ran up on me.
Oh wow,
that was a wrap.
Yeah. So they, where were they exactly? Because like, how were they catching everybody? You know,
My phones were being tapped. You know, so they could see the Nextels and the locations, and they could see also where, because they were the ones calling the phone.
Oh, that's
crazy. They were the ones calling the phone, and as I sent the drivers over there, you know, they were getting, you know, picked up one at a time.
That's crazy. So, wow. So they got y'all all. So they basically got y'all all in one day.
No, they didn't get everybody. They got 11 of us.
Okay. So was there? Okay. So
sorry, I got my dog over there.
Nah, it's all good. You good. So, So when were you raided though? Like, did they raid the stash house after that?
Yeah. So that right there, then when I stepped out of the house, they came through and, you know, they showed me the warrant. They actually took me with cuffs upstairs. Cause we had the stash on the second floor. And they went in there and they already knew where the drugs were at. You know, so right away I was like, oh shit, these motherfuckers know exactly where the drug is at. So I had, at the time, I had over like 500 pairs of Jordans. So I had so many kicks. You know, I was a big collector back then, and I had all the coke in like one box in a certain spot. And as soon as I go up there, they're like, where's the drugs at? I'm like, what the fuck is you talking about? There's no drugs in here. And they went right to the box. They opened it up.
Oh, so they knew exactly what box it
was. Yeah, they knew exactly. And that's why I already knew. I was like, there was only three people, you know, that knew where that stash was.
Oh, so, okay.
And like two of them, I trust, like, you know, with everything I got, you know, I know they were never going to tell on me. And it was one guy that, you know, he was one of my drivers. I was cool with him. And he caved in when you know, the time came up. He told on me.
That's crazy. So so now you're taken to the you're taken to like jail, whatever. And were you sentenced? So whenever you got sentenced, I heard that they gave you back your wallet that had like 10 tabs of acid in there. So
yeah, it was not when, you know, when they sentence you, it takes a long time till you get sentenced. Yeah. First, you go to jail, you're fighting your case for a while.
Mm-hmm.
But when the DEA caught me, they brought me to the precinct. And when I'm in the precinct, they're taking fingerprints, they put you in a cell, you know, you're waiting, they're interrogating, you know, my drivers one at a time. You know, and so they take everything from your wallet, you know, they closed all my accounts, all the shit. And I remember coming in, that one of the officers coming in, and he passes me my wallet. I had a photo of like my son in that wallet, and then I started looking around, and that was it. And then I had like a little zipper in the side, and inside the zipper there was like, yo, I pulled it out. I was like, yo, there's 10 pieces of acid over here. And I remember all my guys were in different cells. You know, and so each person was in a different cell, and I tell my boys, I'm like, yo, I got this acid over here. And they're like, yo, pass them over. I want to drop one. And I'm like, nah, fuck that. And I took all of them. I took all 10 pieces of acid, and I was tripping my ass off.
Damn. Because like acid's like one of those drugs where it like makes you like just go crazy, because like you start seeing stuff, don't you?
Nah, I mean, you see, you feel, I don't know, you feel like you don't see shit, you know, people, I don't know. For me, I've never seen anything like crazy like that, where I'm like, I'm seeing like three heads and shit like that. For me, every time I've taken it was like, I feel like super duper high and everything is just so funny to me. You know, like I cannot stop laughing. Like you laugh so much that your jaw gets locked in a smiling position.
That's crazy. So were you being sentenced that same day?
No, you don't get, so you see the judge, you see the judge a couple, you know, maybe like 24 hours after. And so I saw the judge, and I remember I was like still a little bit high. And I remember in the interrogation room, they were trying to tell me, you know, who's my connect. They were trying to get me to snitch, and I'm like, fuck. And I was like, y'all niggas are stupid. You motherfuckers gave me acid right now. and they were like, what? I was like, yeah, you just gave me back all the acid I had in my wallet. And I'm twisted right now, and I'm laughing and shit. Yeah. I was taking back my cell. And then when I see the judge is like, so yeah, I hear you're on acid, right? And I was like, yeah. It was like, you know, how much time you facing? You know, we're, and the DA was like, we're going to hit him with kingpin charges, which meant 15 of life. And then once I got to my lawyer, he was like, yo, you know, the best I could do is 12 years. So, you know, I fought my case for about a year in Santa Marcos Island.
Yeah, and so what are kingpin charges be? I know there's something like RICO charges where it's like if you're part of a gang, like everyone part of that gets taken down. So is there anything like that?
Yes, pretty much the same shit. Kingpin charges, you get caught with a certain amount of drugs, selling a certain amount, you get hit with that. you know, run a huge operation. Like,
you're saying. So, all right, cool. So, let me put that back in. So, so it's like, so what did they get you? So how many people did they get with you, and like, how many did they not get, you know?
So they got 11 of us. So pretty much half of the team they didn't get. And so the business kept operating when I was gone. Mm-hmm. It kept operating. People were scared, you know, they were not going as hard. You know, one of my boys took over. They didn't do too well, you know, operating the whole thing. And then Joey came back out from it. So while I was locked up, when I got caught, Joey was already locked up. He was already like 4 months. He was coming out for like 7-8 months. And so when I was in there, he got out and then he took over the phones again.
Yeah.
And then he brought the business back up. But, you know, motherfuckers is idiots because those phones were still being tapped.
Oh, no.
You know, and so it was like they basically, like, I remember calling the phones when I was locked up. I called one of the phones and the message was like, yeah, you know, please contact this number if you need extra services, as a voice message. And so, you know, they were trying to redirect people to a different new number. And
that's crazy.
That's how it went down.
Yeah. So, okay. So what was prison like? So, because I know you came in there and you had like a whole bunch of medical issues that you didn't know about.
Yeah, so when I went in, prison, yeah, it's crazy. I mean, the drug dealing didn't stop. You know, I was still selling and getting people to bring me it. Like, some of my team members that didn't get caught, they were bringing me drugs while I was locked up. You know, I was hustling in there, sneaking in stuff through the visiting room, getting, you know, cops to bring shit in for me.
Mm-hmm.
And it just, the hustle didn't stop. The mentality didn't stop. Until I got sentenced, and then I got sentenced to 7 years and 5 parole, which combined meant like a 12-year, you know, sentence, so 7 plus 5. And when I went upstate, they take all these medical exams. You know, they take your blood tests, they give you, you know, vaccines. You don't even know what the hell you're taking. You're just lining up and doing whatever the officer's telling you to do. And that's the first day. And I remember like 2 weeks being upstate, they called me down to the medical unit and they were like, yo, your cholesterol levels are through the roof. Like, if you don't start eating correctly or start exercising, that you could probably die within 5 years.
And that's crazy.
And that like shocked me. I was like, yo, I got 7 years. I'm not going to fucking die in this bitch, you know? Mm-hmm. So that motivated me to start working out, and I started working out obsessively.
That's crazy. So you lost 70 pounds, right? Something like that?
I lost 71 pounds in 6 months.
That's crazy. Yeah. And did you lose that all in, or was that isolation or whatever?
No. I ended up I didn't lose all of my weight in solitary confinement.
Okay.
I ended up in solitary at different times, but...
Okay.
Yeah, I was in a cell though. I was locked up, you know, and then I was going out to the yard running and all that stuff.
Okay. And then I also heard that you got like other people like involved with that and started like getting people to work out in prison and stuff. Is that kind of where that started from?
Yeah, so I lost all that weight and I caught the eyes of other inmates. So there was one guy that came up to me and was like, yo, I want to start working out with you. He was extremely overweight. And we started jogging together. And he started jogging with me, and then I became like a so-called trainer in there, and you know, somebody else started come up to me, and so we just formed this like group of camaraderie, you know, like to work out it with each other, you know. And then I helped over 20 inmates, over 1,000 pounds combined. We would just like form a circle around me, or you know, somebody else would lead the exercises. And I didn't think I was going to start a business behind it. It was just something that we just did as a friendship, you know?
And so, okay. So, and then a couple months before you were released, you got into an issue with an officer, right? And then said that was completely made up and like not supposed to happen. Like, what was that moment like? I mean, because I also heard that you basically told your son or something that you're gonna be out and you weren't able to come out because of that.
Yeah, so towards the end of my incarceration, I ended up in solitary confinement in 24-hour lockdown because this officer decided to search me. And as he was searching me, he was searching me really aggressively. And, mm-hmm. and as he was going between my legs, I like twitched my body.
Oh.
And as soon as I twitched my body, he punched me behind my head. And he said, "Today's not my day. Don't fuck with me." And so he knocked me out. I remember seeing like stars for a second, and I got back up and turned around on the officer to avoid another hit. But he said I was attempting to attack him. And so he presses the alarm for the whole prison. About a half a dozen officers come to the scene. They break me down. You know, they throw me in the box. And, you know, for a charge like that, you know, if I was found guilty for that charge, I would be facing 3 more years in prison.
Mm-hmm.
At that time, I was out for early release. I did this program. I had about 2 months to go before I was being released. And I told my son, I was like, "Yo, I'm coming home." You know, I taught my son ABCs through a prison phone. You know,
that's crazy.
You know, so like, I was talking to him every day. I was sending him letters all the time. You know, his mom was bringing him up as much as possible to the visiting room.
Mm-hmm.
But it was difficult to tell him like, "Yo, I'm gonna be here for another year." And so I ended up you know, facing another year in prison behind that situation.
Oh wow. So you got out pretty late. So
In solitary confinement, that's when I was contemplating on like really what I wanted to do.
Oh, okay.
That's where Combody came about, you know, like while I was in that cell, just thinking like, "Yo, I need to start thinking differently. I can't sell drugs anymore. Like, I got my son, do the right thing."
And so that's when it hit you that like you can't get back into that.
And so Combody came about.
Yeah, I mean, because once you get out, you can't like if you get like if you're in prison or something, like, you can't get a job easy at all. So it's like that's crazy. So like, did you know that like right as you got out, you wanted to start that business, and then you kind of knew what it was.
Yeah, I mean, I got out and I knew what I wanted to do. I wrote out what I wanted to do while I was in the box.
You know, that's crazy.
I started doing it in local parks and started going up to people randomly telling them, like, you know, I'm selling fitness, you know. And, I took the same tactics
that
I did a drug dealer and just went up to people and just hustled, you know, my ass off.
Okay, so I had a question, and what's the difference between probation and parole? So is it basically like you have a PO officer and stuff like that, or what's the difference between that?
Because you know, it depends. Different states are different. You know, in New York, parole is a more serious charge.
Mm-hmm.
So in New York, if you get probation, you pretty much doing jail time. Or on probation, or you get just probation.
Mm-hmm.
So probation is like a first time offender, you know, catching like a felony charge maybe, or high misdemeanor charge or something like that.
Yeah. So
parole comes after you do, you know, real prison time.
So were you on parole at the time?
Yeah, I got out on parole. I mean, I've been on probation, parole a few times.
So what was life like getting out? Because I know for some people it's really tough, but it seemed like you already had a plan whenever you got out. So
I mean, it was extremely tough, you know. I'm not gonna lie, like I couldn't find a job, you know, like fitness was not paying the bills, you know. I had my son to provide with. Like, I lost everything I had, you know. I had no money at the time. I had my Jordans, and that was it. Like, I basically took my sneakers and sold them.
Oh, yeah. Know?
And that's how I started Combody.
That's crazy. So what were some restrictions that like you still had coming out of prison? Like,
I mean, parole, you have from, you have to get up, you know, 7 a.m. I mean, 7 a.m., you can't leave your house until 7 a.m.
Oh, really?
You have to be at home by 9 p.m.
That's right.
You can't drink. You can't smoke. You can't do anything.
Yeah.
You can't be around somebody that's been incarcerated. You know, if you get locked, if I was standing mm-hmm. on the street and I was hanging out with somebody that was on parole too, and the cops stopped us, we're both getting locked up just because
really?
we're hanging out with each other.
Like just even on some simple stuff, like
there was, you know, there was people in my building that I lived with, family members that we were on parole at the same time. You know, I couldn't even, you know, I hung out with them and saw them and all that stuff. But you know, if cops would stop us, you know, we would get locked up.
That's crazy. So, damn. But okay. So, Combody, basically. So, tell us how, like, basically what it is and like how that got started and how that's going.
Yeah. So, Combody is an all body weight exercise program. Mm-hmm. It was derived from like all the stuff that I've done to myself while I was locked up, you know, the same regimen that I went through to lose 70 pounds in 6 months and to, you know, get cut up and work out. That's what I, you know, started implementing in the streets. And as the business started growing, I started hiring more people, you know, and the people that I hired were people that were locked up, you know, people that I knew that was incarcerated with, people that I met on the street that needed an opportunity because society didn't want to give them a second chance or provide them a job. And so this was a avenue for me to not only give back, you know, to people that I was incarcerated with and people that I knew that was, you know, affected by the system, but also change perceptions with people that wanted to work out with us. You know, most people thought that, you know, people that have been in the system are bad people, you know, and I feel like people just need to listen to our stories because there was some way, somehow, or some story that ended up us in that state of mind, in that system. Mm-hmm. And if we don't get a second chance, you know, most of the time we're going to revert back to that same, you know, revolving door. And so that's been my mission, is to hire as many people coming out of the prison system as possible.
I mean, people get out, like people have like a wrong perception whenever you go to prison or whatever. It's like, but you're still there for like 10 years and people don't want to go back. So it's like they want to change their life completely. But people really don't look at that whenever they've been to prison. I guess that's what they look at first.
Absolutely.
That's crazy. So I had a question though. So I've seen like pictures of your workout facility and everything, and it's themed with a prison theme, right?
Yeah.
And what was the idea of that and why was that? Because I thought that was the coolest thing ever with like the bars and everything.
Yeah, I mean, that was an idea that I always had, you know, because in the beginning I was working out of a park. From a park, I started like renting out little ballet studios. And I was like running stuff there. And I remember there was one publication that came about. This lady came up to me and was like, you know, I want to do an interview with you. And she took one of my classes and I was like, for sure, let's do it. And she was like, what do you want to see this happening? You want to open up your own facility? And I was like, yeah, I want to open up my own correctional facility.
Yeah.
And I was playing games, but I started coming up with the idea of like right there and then. I was like, yeah, I want to open up a spot where, you know, people take a mugshot on the wall. You know, they get 5 minute showers, you know, they go through a prison gate before class, you know, and I want to create some type of theme.
That's crazy. I love that.
And when she wrote that publication, I was like, oh shit, you know, I put this shit out there, now I gotta do it, you know. So,
oh, so that was before everything happened.
Yeah, that was before.
Oh, so you just, oh, okay.
Yeah, I was just talking shit and then, you know, shit came out to being something.
Wow, that's crazy. Because I saw pictures, I was like, that's the coolest thing ever. Because like, you got the bars and everything.
And I did that, so, you know, not only for just branding, but also like to really bring awareness. Mm-hmm. You know, when people come in, you know, like they know what they're gonna get into.
Mm-hmm.
Because in the beginning, when I was telling people I'm gonna do a prison style boot camp, you know, some people told me I was crazy. They didn't want to be a part of it. You know, I got discriminated a few times. So I wanted people to come in and be like, yo, this is, I wanted them to know what we were about. And on top of that, we have like a lot of prison informative stuff on the walls, you know, like you could get all the judicial messed up things that we have in America. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, 25% of the people that are incarcerated in the whole planet, you know, live over here in the US and in a correctional facility. Mm-hmm. You know, we only make up 5% of the world's population, you know, like, so this is a system made up, you know, to affect a lot of people that have been, you know, who are minorities, Black, Hispanics, you know, and we show the differences on the walls that, you know, we display in combating.
Mm-hmm. That's crazy. So that's crazy. I mean, I love the motive you have behind it. I mean, it's, as you said, you're trying to hire all these people that have been to the prison system and everything. So I love that. So, I mean, how far do you think you want to, like, take this? Is this, like, just your thing now and you should keep doing it?
I want to be, you know, the next CrossFit, you know. Mm-hmm. I want to have, you know, multiple facilities and mm-hmm. multiple cities. You know, I feel like there's so many people that write me jail mail, you know, that want to work for us.
Yeah. Oh, so, okay.
You know, so many people that want to franchise this opportunity. And so I feel like if I could give, you know, a second chance to somebody else coming out, where are they at, you know, in the space of fitness. Mm-hmm. And this is what this is the talent that we grow to gain while we incarcerate it. You know, we're working mm-hmm. out nonstop, you know. So
you said it's all body weight, right? So it's stuff that you can learn over there. And then, like, if you really want to keep doing it, like, you can implement it at your home and everything, right?
Exactly. You could do it in a small constrained space, just like I did in my prison cell.
That's crazy. Yeah, because that's another thing. A lot of people, like, they get into it and they can't work out anywhere but a gym. So it's like you're not open to a gym 24/7.
Yep.
That's crazy.
we have on-demand videos too, you know. Mm-hmm. People could, like, tune in for $14 a month. That's, you know, they could watch all our pre-recorded videos and not only, you know, help their body, but also support somebody that's been coming out of the system that needs, you know, mm-hmm. a financial, you know, support.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think that's gonna wrap it up for me today. If you want to go ahead and give us some more on Combody and tell us where we can find you and where we can find your company Combody, just go ahead and do that.
Yeah, you can hit me up on Instagram, just like Adiba did. Yes, you know, you just went on a DM. It went down in the DM. So hit us up at Combody, CONBODY. That's, again, CONBODY. You could just check out our website, combody.com, to sign up. And I appreciate y'all.
Yeah, thank you for coming on the show again. And for everyone watching, I will catch y'all in the next one. Thank you.
See you. Peace.